This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
Yesterday in California, a man fatally shot. Bad news again. I mean, when are we, or are we there, used to these school shootings? With the president now changed, we don't have to sit through the obligatory another school shooting. We have to get these guns off the streets, et cetera, et cetera. Some facts on shootings and facts on guns. But then let's look for the real cause. Let's start there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
May 18th, 1927, Bath Consolidated School in Bath, Michigan. There was a farmer named Andrew Kehoe. Andrew had quite the plan for the day. He set off two dynamite explosions at a school. Killed him, six adults, and 38 children. That was the first mass killing at a school. 1927, he was a school board member and the town clerk. He was having financial problems and arguments with the school board. He killed his wife, set his home and farm on fire, and then he went to school. He planted and wired hundreds of pounds of dynamite in the basement of the school. He set off the first set of dynamite, then got into an altercation with the school superintendent and set off the second set of dynamite in his truck. The second blast killed him and the superintendent of schools. These have happened before, but things seem to have changed. Yesterday, another school shooting, this time an elementary school, San Bernardino, California. An estranged husband apparently entered his wife's classroom. She was a special ed teacher. He shot her dead. Two students behind her. One of them was killed, another one critically wounded. Then he killed himself. As I said in my office yesterday with the guys, and we watched the TV, we watched this thing unfold, and we saw the newsroom at the Blaze start to pick up activity at the very early signs of this shooting, I thought to myself, when did we get used to this? Is it the media exposure that just makes us aware of every single thing in every great detail? They have increased since the 1990s, but they're not a modern phenomenon. The earliest known school shooting in America happened in 1764. Four Indians entered a schoolhouse near Greencastle, Pennsylvania, shot and killed the schoolmaster, and then nine children. Wasn't blamed on the guns. School shootings happened through the 1800s, especially after the Civil War, and in every decade of the 1900s. But there was an increase in the 1990s and a surge, sorry, an increase in the 70s and a surge in the 90s. Is it the guns? I guess, I mean, we could throw out the people don't kill people, guns kill people argument. But let me give you the actual stats. There are now 300 million guns in the hands of Americans. That's a new number. Because of the Obama administration, Barack Obama, the greatest salesman for the gun industry of all time, 300 million guns in the hands of Americans. Yet gun homicides are down 49%, and overall gun violence is down 75%. So it's not the gun. There are two trends that are clear in school shootings, especially since the 1960s. Most of the school shootings are now committed by a student at the school, and they most often end in suicide by the perpetrator. Whether it's a teenager or an adult, suicide is usually the way it ends. So what has changed? Why did we have one school shooting or one tragedy a decade since the beginning of our country? But now they seem regular. Is there an increase in school shootings? Or is it just that we see them all the time on television? We know it's not the increase of guns in circulation. What happened in the 1960s? Well, in 1962 and 1963, the Supreme Court had some decisions. They removed Bible reading in public school and prayer in public school. But that seems to be an all-too-convenient scapegoat. Because the decline in prayer and Bible reading in homes is probably more to blame. Forget about the school. How many of us are doing it at home? Public education is definitely broken. But so are our homes. As a culture now, parenting, pretty much lazy for the most part. Let's admit it, America. Let's stop lying to ourselves. For the most part, parenting has become naive, spineless, lazy. We point our fingers at other people's kids, at other people's doings. We point our fingers at our schools when proper education is our responsibility, not the school's responsibility. Several consecutive generations of blame. The blame culture is now the norm in our society. We're too busy to care or speak up for common sense values because common sense is now considered bigotry. It's not heroic when a parent indulges their three-year-old son who decides he wants to be a girl. But that's what we're told. It's heroic. No, it's child abuse. Maybe we got so busy chasing the American dream that we neglected the things that are most important. What good is it for somebody to gain the whole world and yet lose their soul? You'd know where that came from. At least Americans would have known where that came from back in the 1950s, maybe even in the 60s. But most people have no idea where that phrase came from. Because we took God out of the schools, but we took him out of our homes. We left him in church, if he was even at our church in the first place. We've abandoned God like he's somebody we left in a nursing home that we visit when it's convenient or just because we have to. It's Christmas, we better go see grandma in the nursing home. Ironically, the progressive movement sees God as the problem because he's outdated, old wives' tales. We've got this, we're science now, science man. We left him behind to teach the gorillas while we follow the march of mankind. Man's ingenuity is the one that has the answers, not God. And America is morally much worse off. Our culture is crumbling. Why? Because we abandon everything that we used to believe in. Once you remove God from the house, once you remove God from the culture at large, and then you add technology, remarkable technology. Well, then you add fuel to the fire. We adopt new tech so quickly because we like sparkly new things. Have you seen the new iPhone 8? I mean, the new iPhone 8, you got to have that. We don't even stop to consider the pitfalls of what virtual reality will mean. We don't think about the consequences of anything. We just dive in. We're just beginning to reap the dark harvest that we are sowing. But the availability of pornography on handheld devices, available to our children whenever and wherever. It's not just porn, but violence pornography as well. We've let our collective guard down so long, our guard doesn't even work anymore. Hollywood, the entertainment business, has long been the convenient scapegoat for influencing the violence in our culture. But it's not Hollywood. It's our partnership with Hollywood. They wouldn't make it if we didn't buy it. We're buying it. We're watching it. It's not their fault. It's our fault. We buy a lot of it. And it's like giving drugs to our kids. There was a study that was released and conducted by the researchers at Dartmouth University, published by the National Institute of Health. So this isn't crazy talk. This is the National Institute of Health. A growing body of scientific literature documents the negative effects of exposure to violent media on children, adolescents, and adults. The work has been performed with diverse methods and samples, blah, 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 blah. Short and long-term outcomes consistently find that exposure to violent video games, television, violent films, and music has been linked to aggression and violence. Taken together, a clear picture has emerged that exposure to violent media increases the likelihood of aggressive thoughts, emotions, and behavior. It goes on. The weight of the scientific evidence has led organizations such as the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, the American Medical Association, the American Academy of Family Physicians, the American Psychological Association, the American Psychiatric Association to sign a joint statement on the negative effects of exposing children to media violence, which stated at, quote, this time well over 1,000 studies point to overwhelmingly casual connections between media violence and aggressive behavior in children, end quote. That's quite a list. Why? You want to talk about science deniers? We are science deniers. It's not just the holy rollers. Science is proving that we're putting poison into our system. What is happening to us? Has our world gotten better or worse? Can you even imagine dealing with the things that your kids have to deal with? I was laying with my son on the bathroom floor the other day. His mom said, hey, what's going on? And he was having a bad day. And he went into his bathroom and he just laid down on his bathroom floor, and I walk in, and he was laying there, and I got down, and I laid down next to him, and I said, buddy, what's happening? He said, Dad, I'm all jumbled up inside. I know what that means. I said, you've been on the internet? He actually begged me, please, Dad, is there a way you can control and filter? Our children are losing their identity. They don't know their family's history. They don't know the history of our country. They don't know where they came from. We relegate American history to be taught by our coaches in public schools. Believe me, as I interview people that are going to be teaching my children next year in school, I'm looking for the history teacher that gets it. That's not a great base to start kids with. American history that they get in college has been hijacked by zealot professors with axes to grind against their own country. If they even learn, do you know that becoming a history professor now at Georgetown University only requires one semester of American history? To be a history major, one semester of American history. You can graduate from Georgetown University and have a good shot of, George Washington University and have a good shot at not knowing who George Washington is. We don't care anymore. And that's why when you're going to places like Harvard, asked last week whether President Trump's rhetoric or ISIS is more dangerous. That's why the people at Harvard, the students at Harvard, picked Donald Trump's rhetoric. his words are more dangerous than the actions of ISIS. Why are people shooting each other? Yesterday in San Bernardino, it's just a crazy man who had an out with his wife. But we are walking around soulless. We are walking around being told the lie that there is no connection beyond the connection of science. We are being told the lie that there is no hardship in life. This is the first time in American history that we've had several successive generations that have not faced a significant hardship at all, like the Great Depression or war or both, while at the same time enjoying rising prosperity. Yes, we've had the long-running war of terrorism, Afghanistan and Iraq, but that didn't affect us at all like it did in World War II. Most people don't even realize we're still at war. Affluenza is real. And increasingly, we're a wimpy, morally bankrupt nation of entitled entertainment junkies. When did this happen? When did we stop looking at TV with shock and horror?
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
We have, you know, if you agreed at all with that monologue, we have something for you. 18 to 25 year olds. We have two sessions, one in June, one in July. I believe we only have one more slot to fill, and it's not easy to get in. We are looking to have an intern program. We are opening up our vault and our library for a select few to research original historic documents from our collection, David Barton, mine, Mercury One's collection. And we are doing 2 weeks of projects, research and lectures focused on America's history and the people directly involved with the founding of our nation. You identify the philosophies and ideologies that shaped our laws and see it in the original document. It's a biblical worldview on our American heritage and American exceptionalism. If you would like to be an intern again, it is for 18 to 25-year-olds. There is a slight cost. It's $375, but you also have to provide your transportation and meals and lodging and everything else. But 2 weeks, you can go to mercuryone.org/intern, mercuryone.org/intern. You'll be working right here, right across the way in our studio lot at the Mercury One headquarters, mercuryone.org/intern.
Protection from Jeffy not included.
Back in just a minute.
To the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
By the way, I put Hero Control on my all of our devices at home because I was locking everything up in the safe and, you know, let an iPad out for one night and Rafe got onto it and it's bad. This stuff, can you imagine? Remember when we were kids and like there was one Playboy that would like, you know, all the neighborhood kids had and you'd keep it in whoever had the tree fort or the fort or whatever. It was usually Jeffy was selling them.
I had more than one.
Yeah. But they were and they were kept underneath the counter. They weren't even in the magazine rack. They were kept underneath the counter. You had to ask for them. It was a big deal when we were growing up. Now access to anything and everything. So I told Rafe and he said, Dad, can you put something? I said, yeah. So we put this Hero parental control. They're an advertiser of ours and we've talked to them. This is not an ad. And so they were the ones that jumped to mine. And I told him, I said, yeah, not only now will I be able to see what, not only will I be able to block, but I'll be able to see when each device was used, where the GPS location of where it was used, what you did, how long you did it. And on top of that, I can access, if it's in use, I can access the camera and I can see you use it. And he was like, oh, wow, that will be good. Yeah, I'm like, that'll stop you. That'll stop you from using.
Was he regretting trying to empower you in this way? After that?
No, he's actually not. It's amazing how our kids, at least mine, how our kids are struggling. They're really struggling. They want help.
I've been thinking lately that I might embrace M. Night Shyamalan's The Village and kind of just put us all into a field and just hope a plane doesn't fly over so they're indicated that it's actually modern times. That's a way to go, too. It's another option. It's funny, that movie was like thought of as being so ridiculous. But I mean, in today, you could totally see a group of people being like, you know what? Mm-hmm. Screw it. We've got babies. Let's bring them into the village. Why don't we take a bunch of medication and let's see what happens.
By the way, spoiler alert. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Stu.
Yeah, appreciate that.
The movie came out like 20 years ago.
Yeah, I see dead people. Yeah, thank you, Stu.
Well, you just blew that movie by the same premise.
What movie? It's not the worst. The worst is Pat. You haven't watched Soylent Green? Don't watch the Soylent Green. It's people. You haven't watched that movie? No. You should watch it. It's great. Well, you just gave me the last line. Now that I know Soylent Green is people, there's no reason to watch.
To defend Pat, what was that, decades before you watched it?
But I said I had never seen it. Anyway. So, I mean, I think our kids are really struggling and they are begging us. They're begging us for some lines. And I think that we don't even know where the line. Think about how things have changed. Tell me the things that your kids are shocked by or frightened by that we were terrified of. I mean, there were things that we were, for instance, don't even go that way on entertainment. Let's just go to the news. Do you remember how the world stopped on Columbine? The entire world stopped on Columbine. I remember that vividly. Yesterday, another school shooting. We're like, another school shooting. What was it Dave Chappelle said? Dave Chappelle in his new comedy thing. He said, I remember when the teacher wheeled in the TV. And we had three channels. And they were like, hey, kids, let's watch the Challenger.
And it exploded.
Right.
And that was horrific.
Oh, spoiler alert. Thank you. I was going to watch that later today.
And he said, now we have that every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do.
Now he's something like, every day.
How do you guys care about anything? How do you care? This generation. You don't. Do we have that clip by any chance?
I thought I saw it on
The Chappelle clip on the Challenger?
No.
I thought we had that. It was really so right. He was talking to the next generation saying, how do you care? You can't care about everything. And it's happening all the time now.
It's hard enough for us.
You know, a point has been made by a lot of people that, and again, yesterday's school shooting was a domestic dispute between the teacher and her husband.
Correct. And that's the kind of stuff that used to happen.
And that stuff did happen.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's a little bit different. But you're right, just, you know, generally speaking. And the fact that, like, really, I mean, far, far more people care that a doctor in his tough doctor life had to miss a flight and get a bloody lip than an 8-year-old who was killed in the crossfire a domestic dispute in a school.
You know why, I think? Is because that one's too hard to look at and we don't know what to do about it.
Yeah.
Where United Airlines, easy. Target them. Tweet out something nasty about United Airlines.
And on the school shooting, anybody who has any say in sort of the direction we travel to fix this problem won't even recognize that the problem is anything other than the gun.
Yes.
The gun itself is always the focus of the discussion afterwards.
Can I tell you something? You know what part of the problem is? We're mad at everything. We're mad at everything. We're mad at United Airlines. Mm-hmm. And the Sissification, look, I would not want to be the guy who was pulled off of American Airlines, and I'd be pissed. Mm-hmm. And I think they handled it horribly. I think the CEO of United Airlines is handling this.
You're not screaming like a three-year-old girl if they come to get you.
If this was your doctor,
I'd be finding a new one.
So would I.
Apparently he wasn't doing that great of business anyway. He was flying coach.
But I mean, I would find another doctor because I would look at this guy and go, "That's pathetic, dude."
Yeah. What?
Come on. United Airlines is wrong. I hate that. But there's no good guy here.
Right. But United Airlines is wrong. And the CEO came off like such a douche.
I mean, we want to hate the airline. It's tough.
Between the media, the internet, and this doctor, they are turning me around, and I'm becoming a United Airlines defender.
I know.
At this point, they are turning me around. I'm just so irritated by all of them. And part of it is like making this into something worse than a school shooting. Everyone is obsessed about it, and I understand it was a bad incident. They handled it poorly.
We can all relate to flying, too.
Yes.
We all relate to that.
But, I mean, we can all relate to having, you know, kids or going to school. I mean, there's plenty of things to relate to. It's just that this has become, because there's video of it, it's become this gigantic story. And I get it. Like, it's bad. Like, there's no way to defend what happened there. But let's put things in perspective a little bit.
There is no perspective anymore.
No, there isn't.
Yeah, there is no perspective. And, you know, did you hear what Sulu said, the new Sulu from Star Trek?
Stunningly, I do not know anything he's ever said.
Pat knew this morning. Yeah. So Pat told me this morning that he said, you know, this is just typical. This is the Donald Trump culture. No, it's not.
So he's blaming Donald Trump for the United Airlines.
Quite honestly.
Thing. That's unbelievable.
This is ready to really have your head spun. This is the George Bush culture. And it would have been anybody else. If Al Gore would have won, it would be the Al Gore culture. This is the culture created by the Department of Homeland Security. Sit down, shut up, do exactly as you're told, and we can pat you down, we can drag you out. Before Homeland Security, no way would anyone have dragged an American citizen off the plane like that.
What would they have done?
They wouldn't have done it like that.
I mean, again, like, unless
you're a real problem.
But I mean, like, again, I'm not defending what they did, but I think a civilized adult, right? This is an upsetting situation. You want to go home. You paid for the flight. Now, of course, you did agree that they could bump you off the flight when you bought the ticket. But and everybody knows that. But okay, it's very frustrating. And if they came to a point where they were offering all this money and nobody was taking it, in my opinion, they should have just upped the money until somebody did take it.
Yeah.
However, they decided to do a lottery. Before the lottery came, everybody knew they had a chance, probably a 2 or 3% chance that they would be one of these people selected to go on this flight. Everyone else is sitting there dreading the idea that they might be selected. When you get selected, you don't just sit there.
If you get pissed off and you walk off
the plane and you complain and you go on the internet and you write about how annoyed you are, and you get your money from the airline, and you write a letter to United,
and you complain to the local news station. Right, we all took the bet.
But look, on
the lottery, and you lost.
You don't sit there.
Stop holding up the flight. Get off.
Now, the way they handled it from there was poor.
I know.
And it's also terrible that they overbooked these things in the first place. Stop selling more than you have.
Well, they didn't sell. They didn't sell more than they had.
Yeah, they did because they didn't have room for the pilots who came on.
Right.
So it's still their fault.
May I make an observation here?
Yes.
That we did the same thing.
We started talking about the shooting and what happened to our culture, and look at we all just started talking about this while complaining that everybody's making this into too big of a deal.
Right.
It's where we all live because it's the. We are a people that are searching to have meaning and searching to have control over anything in our life. And so we look at this story as I could have controlled myself better and I can slam United Airlines because I can control them. By slamming them, I hurt them and maybe I can be in control of American Airlines and change their behavior. That's all this talk is about.
And talking about inconvenience is more pleasant than talking about children being killed.
Yes.
Absolutely.
You know?
But again, like it's an interesting, going back to the shooting.
Yeah, but I wasn't talking about the shooting. I think that there is a, I want to find out when in our culture did we, when did we sign off? When did we just, when did we say, they're playing the national anthem, I'm going to turn the TV set off
now? The question is, did we? Because, I mean, when you look at it in a big perspective and you step back for a little bit, yes, we are having more school shootings and they're terrible. And we're 100%. However, that is in the context of violent crime dropping dramatically overall.
I don't think it's just school shootings, though. I'm not talking about just school shootings. I'm talking about, Pat, kids come over to your house. Do any of the kids that come over to your house with your, you know, son or daughter, do they treat you with the respect?
Nope.
That you
not
would have
not
treated
me or my house,
right? You would have treated. I remember going over to other people's.
My gosh!
I was almost afraid of other people's parents.
Better believe it.
And you treated them, yes, Mr. So and So, yes, Mrs. So
and
So.
And I don't know about you, but I would go nowhere in that house if I weren't accompanied by my friend. Right. I'm not just running around the house by myself.
Correct.
Like right. I own the place. They right. do that now.
I know.
They do that.
Going into the refrigerator, going yeah. upstairs in yes. the bedrooms.
Yes, turning on the TV upstairs, yeah, helping themselves to the music stash, looking through the movies we have. What the hell? What are you doing in here?
Going into your 401k, taking money. Yes. I mean, it's yes. unbelievable.
Sleeping with your wife.
Sleeping with your wife. Right.
Wait.
It's unreal.
Wait a minute.
Got a little dark there. But it is an odd thing. It's tough because...
really weird.
But when did that change? And why did that change? Because I think that is...
I think that's part of the...
Part of it.
Yeah, it's part of the participation nothing, trophy society that
but
we have.
It's, I think, go back to God. Nothing is sacred.
Yeah.
Nothing is sacred. There is no joke you can tell unless it's politically incorrect. And then, if somebody violates that, it's the state... that punishes, not God, it's the state that punishes.
Mm-hmm.
It's the culture that punishes. And so your God is the state and culture. And there's nothing sacred anymore. There's no hierarchy even of children and parents. It just doesn't exist. Why? I think it's because we've lost wisdom. We've lost wisdom and reason. And the reason why we lost wisdom and reason is because we stopped reading the only thing that really gives a culture wisdom. We stopped reading that, you know, our kids used to in the 50s, they still knew the Bible. They still knew Solomon. Have you ever read the words of Solomon? I mean, it's just, and you wouldn't believe, you read it and you're like, oh my gosh, that's where that comes from. Oh my gosh, I've heard that saying a million times. Yes, because
mm-hmm.
they're all true. They're all true. And we don't have that anymore. We're looking to the march of mankind. We're looking to science. We're looking to culture to lead our kids.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BACK.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
You know, the good thing is that this generation of kids is changing. I mean, I never would have thought my daughter, Hannah, would have been the one who says, you know, I'm a stay-at-home mom. I'm strong on that. And I'm, you know, homeschool or private school. I'm really going to watch that. And I make all of my children's food from scratch and raw materials. I would have never thought that. The next generation is different.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
Last hour we started talking about the shooting in San Bernardino, which brought us to what's happening to our culture, what's happening to our kids and the family. It's not a breakdown of the school. It's a breakdown really of absolutely everything, because we've pulled away from some principles and we're just experimenting with everything. Everything goes. Everything's okay. Unless it's politically incorrect. The problem is with us. It's not the gun. It's with us. It's with our families. It's with society choosing little things like devaluing a boy over a girl in school. What went from holding our girls up to make sure they could know you could do anything, now we're doing that, but we're doing it at the expense of the boys. Moms are the most important focus of our society. But what about dads? We have Benjamin Watson in. He is the Baltimore Ravens tight end. He has written a couple of books. He wrote Under Our Skin, which was great, and we had him on. He's written a new book called The New Dad's Playbook, Gearing Up for the Biggest Game of Your Life, speaking directly to dads and saying, man up. There's some things that you need to know before you start to be a dad. He joins us in studio right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Benjamin Watson, welcome to the program. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing? Good. Thanks for having me.
First, let's just quickly talk. How's your injury?
It's going well. I tore my Achilles last year. Spoke to you guys a little while ago from the rehab field, actually. Yeah. And it's coming along. It's a 7 to 9 month injury. So
That had to hurt.
Yeah, it did. It did. It's one of those things where it happens and people who tear their Achilles always say, it felt like somebody kicked me in the heel. So I look back, who kicked me in the heel? And nobody was there. I get up because I was going to get the pass, get the ball, and my foot's just kind of, you know, flopping, not connected. So it was painful, but I'm doing well.
How frightening is that as a guy who does this for a living?
Yeah.
And did it go through your mind, am I done?
Oh, yeah, of course. You know, I've had a number of injuries over my career. You know, football has 100% injury rate. That's why we try to do our best to protect players and provide, you know, those benefits for them. But you never know when it's going to be in the game. It could be because of, you know, a younger player or because of skill diminishment or an injury, something like that. I've always been able to bounce back, so trying to do it again.
What do you think about the studies that shows that rugby players don't get hurt, even though they have no padding, because we overprotect here? And so you just kind of cut loose.
I thought about that a lot, Glenn. I mean... If you look at the two games, rugby is more like soccer, as in the game flows. Mm-hmm. You don't have these collisions where guys are at a standstill from 20 yards away and they're running full speed and colliding with each other. Mm-hmm. So number one, the collisions aren't the same as in football. Mm-hmm. Number two, when it comes to protecting players, you look at a helmet, right? If you don't have a helmet on, do you think you will use your head in a way to break it?
No.
No, you won't. If you have a helmet on, though, you are more inclined to use your head in tackling, in defending, in blocking as a weapon, whatever, however you want to put it. You feel this sense of security that you don't have. However, your brain is suspended in fluid. So while your helmet protects your skull, it doesn't protect your brain. And so when you look at rugby, you know, that's a great point there. They tackle differently because they don't have the equipment.
They don't have a false sense of security.
Exactly. But also the game isn't set up the way football is. Football is a game of collision. That's why people watch. That's why we play it. That's why you like it. Yep.
It's really nice to have someone who can not only talk sports, but also match the athletic ability of Glenn. It's just so rare to have someone in here who
I don't think
that.
We need to go here right now. I thought it was a pleasant conversation. I was holding my own, and we were there. So Ben, talk to me a little bit about the book that you've just written. Why you've written it? I mean, you're in some ways a very controversial guy. And excuse me for not, I don't follow football at all. Yeah. Are you controversial?
You're in Dallas and don't follow football?
Yeah, I know.
My aunt would turn over. Yeah.
And I used to work with Joe Theismann, and I still actually root, and mainly only because I work with Joe Theismann that I root for the Cowboys. The things that you say are controversial in society only because I think they're rooted in common sense, and we're not a common sense place anymore.
Yeah.
Do you have problems with your coworkers and your fellow players? And
No, not at all.
Really good.
I would say this. The thing I love about the NFL is that you have a group of 60 or so guys from different walks of life, economic, ethnicity, geographical locations. They come together, and if it's done correctly, it can be a great place to bounce ideas. Mm-hmm. You have conversations that you probably won't have in any other setting because it wouldn't be it wouldn't be right for corporate guidelines, so to speak. And so we're able to talk about these different things. And, you know, when I say something, whether it's about abortion or whether it's about race, whether it's about social justice, whether it's about something political, or like in this case with the new book about fatherhood and men standing up and being dads. It could be something about domestic violence, you know, what happened 2 days ago with the murder-suicide. 94% of those, the victims are females in murder-suicides. And so whenever I step up and say something like that, it's amazing how many guys say, man, I kind of agree with that too. Let's talk about this. Mm.
So let's talk about the book. Do you get into a man? And I'm sorry, but the book isn't even out yet, so I haven't read it.
May 2nd.
Yeah. Does the book talk about the role of a man and the way he treats a woman? And
it does. It does. My wife is the one really who got me to do it. So
the story of every project.
Yeah. Us men drag our feet on things, and our women are the ones that make us do.
it is the story. It's what people mean behind every successful man. There's a good woman.
Exactly.
Yeah, because like, they're saying, get up and do that.
It's like the man is the head, but the woman is the neck. She will turn that head wherever she wants to go. So she's been trying to kind of employ me to write this book. We have five children. The oldest is 8. And she's been employing me to write this book for a while as a handbook to help dads through pregnancy, really, in supporting their wives, supporting the women, the mother of their children through this process. Because a lot of dads, when I had my first child, she's 8 now, but I didn't know what I was getting into. I didn't know what to do when my wife had morning sickness. I didn't know what to do when I went to the OB and he's checking for the heartbeat. And, you know, I had all this anxiety that we have as men. And so the reason for the book, number one, is to educate men. So men work best when we have information. Mm. So everything from areola to zygote terms will be covered in the book, technical terms, so that men know what they're getting into when it comes to being a father, when it comes to their wives being pregnant. But also, there's practical application, you know, things that I messed up on, things I wish I would have done better.
Like what? Communication.
Well, like I said before, I was very, we're two type A personalities, my wife and I. And so sometimes we butt heads. That leads to arguments. Our first couple of years of marriage weren't the most pleasant. I'll admit that. But understanding that you're on the same team, understanding that you have her best interests at heart. And number one, you need to be present. The number one thing for a man that I implore guys in this book is that they need to be present, not just with their money providing for a roof over the head, but they need, women need, and the child needs their time, needs their support. We live in a time where there's 33% pretty much of kids grow up without a father. And that leads to a lot of the ills that we've been talking about. And so my goal is to educate guys, but also empower them and encourage them that they can do it.
I'm a little concerned that one of the main things you seem to be advocating in the book is to store your baby inside of a football helmet.
That's just the cover. Don't judge the book by the cover. Okay. That's just the cover.
Okay. That's what that means, don't judge a book?
Okay. The cover sometimes
but
could
a lot
be
of guys, misleading. A lot of guys feel like, you know, and I've had these conversations before, and I've even felt a little bit that, you know, this time when they're young doesn't really matter. So basically the book goes from conception up until the first few weeks when the baby's home. So kind of like conception being the preseason training camp in football, the Super Bowl being when the baby's born, and kind of the post-game idea is when the baby's home, those first few weeks when the mother is extremely tired and you need to kick in and you might need to cook, you might need to wash dishes, you might need to do some clothes, you need to do some things to help out because, again, you guys are a team and it's okay if you get out of your normal comfort zone, what you've been doing, for her.
It's also really, I think, a hard time when you have a child because everything is geared towards the woman and the baby. Yeah. And even when you hold the baby, The baby's not looking at you like they look at the mom, because, I mean, God placed that nipple right.
But that's not true, Glenn. That's not true. Studies have shown that skin-to-skin contact is vital when the baby is born. For the mother and for the father.
I agree with that. I agree with that. What I'm saying is the guy can feel like it's not, like I'm not useless. I'm useless. I can't feed really. I can't. You know, I don't have that bond. There is that bond at early days, and the guy can just feel
especially if they breastfeed.
Right.
Yeah. You're not a part of that.
I'm useless here. That's true. And it's and it's a total lie.
And I felt that. One of the things I talk about is my wife nursed our children for a year, all of them for a year afterwards. And so one thing I would do would be she would pump some milk for me at night, and I would get up at night and do some feedings with the milk. And obviously I can't nurse, but it was a way for me to bond with my children and kind of get tired too, because you're going to go through that zombie stage, and for me to be able to get up and let her sleep for a little bit was very important. So that's one way. But, you know, one of the things I'm always fearful of, and I think you touched on it, was that I'm losing my wife. I will say that with these child, I felt like, man, I don't know if I want to go through this, because it's going to change the dynamics of our relationship. I'm losing her.
Oh, yeah.
How long is she going to be gone? When is she going to come back? But I found that when I'm intentionally involved, those feelings start to go away sooner. But those are real things. The reality of it is, when a child comes into a relationship, whether it's the first child, second, third, fourth, or fifth child, the dynamics change, not only for the children that are there, but for the husband and wife. But that husband-wife relationship is one that has to remain strong, not only for its benefit, but for the benefit of the children.
Yeah, that's really difficult to do, because you, especially as the child grows, you have things that come up, and you're like, this child needs the attention right now. And so your relationship has to morph and change. And it, for to a guy at least, it does feel like you're losing your wife.
Yeah.
You know, she's mom and not my wife.
Exactly.
And it's hard. It's really hard.
Well, yeah, it is. One of the things, one thing I talk about, obviously, every relationship book talks about communication, but the main thing with communication is honesty. And so with my first, you mentioned something that I did wrong. With my first couple, I wasn't honest about my feelings. I wasn't honest that I felt like I was losing her, that I was hurt, those sorts of things. In the last few pregnancies, I've told her, you know, this is how I feel. How do we combat this? So that way she's aware of it. And one thing we always try to do is get back on schedule with our date nights. I look forward to, after we have a baby, after the schedules get all messed up, one thing we try to do with our relationship is have scheduled date nights. During the season, it's actually easier during the season, because our schedule is very regimented. So we go on Mondays or Tuesdays. But especially after having a child, reconnecting in that way, I talk about, you know, intimacy. You know, there's a contrary to popular belief by men, sex isn't the only form of intimacy, right?
So I touched on what else?
That's something else. Hey, I felt the same way, like, really? But I talk about those things. You know, how do you navigate her changing body? When it comes to sex, how long afterwards? How do you rekindle that passion when all these things have happened, and the emotions and the mood swings and the hormones and all those sorts of things? How do you make her feel beautiful?
Boy, I wish I would have had this book the first time, maybe even the third time.
Does it say in there, don't be as out of shape as we are, instead be as in good shape as an NFL player is, and then the intimacy is follows?
But that's how guys think.
Yes.
Guys are like, man, in shape for intimacy, but a woman will tell you something otherwise. She'll say, you know what, I can deal with your beer gut if you are, if you are affirming me.
That is an absolute lie.
That's a lie. You know my love
language.
I see the way
my wife looks at Chris Pratt on the screen.
That's right. That's
she don't know him, though. She's relationship with
him. No, and I'm glad she doesn't know him.
Or she wouldn't know you anymore.
It might be a totally different story.
Back in a second. The name of the book is The New Dad's Playbook, Gearing Up for the Biggest Game of Your Life. Benjamin Watson is with us. And if you know of somebody who's getting ready to have their first child, or even their second or third child, great book to have, and a great gift as well. The New Dad's Playbook. Our society does not pay any attention to the guys. And quite honestly, I think we really need the help. Back in a minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Talking to Benjamin Watson, he's with the Baltimore Ravens and author of a couple of really good books. The latest is First Dad's Playbook. Where did you come from, Ben? I mean, you know, talking to you just here during the last break, you're telling me what drives you,
yeah,
and the search for justice and what is true and what is right. Mm. Where is that coming from? How did you learn this?
It's a great question. It's deeply rooted in my faith, honestly. You know, as a Christian, everything that I do, my worldview is one where I want to search for kindness, for justice, for righteousness, not because I care about it, because that's what God says he cares about in the book of Jeremiah. And so I want to delight in the things that he delights in.
Were you always spiritual, or was that something?
I became a believer when I was very young. You know, obviously didn't know as much as I know now, but that was the first time when I really understood that I needed to repent and put my faith in Jesus Christ. My father is a minister now. I grew up in what people would call a Christian home, but was told very early that your parents' faith and grandma's faith can't save you. It has to be your own. You have to make a decision what you want to follow. I mean, you know, we all make a decision when it comes to that. And so, I've been a believer for some time, and I've had my ups and my downs, of course. But that's the core of who I am. So everything I do, I want to please the Lord in what I'm doing, whether it's on the football field or whether it's addressing some of these issues that are happening in our country.
How do you teach kids in a society that says so much is relative, and that God, if he exists at all, God's just about love. And so as long as it's love, there's no restrictions anywhere.
Well, you have to have an understanding of what love is. Love is an action. It's not a feeling. Love seeks the best for its recipient. And so love, the large component of love is mercy. A large component of love is justice. And what we've done, we've only taken part of love and turned it into what we want it to be, which is full acceptance of everything. Scripture says that God is love, and because he's love, he must judge sin. So part of love is the loving thing to do is to hold us all to a certain standard of truth. That's the loving thing to do. We're not being loving when we don't tell people the truth.
Ben Watson, the name of the book, The New Dad's Playbook. Order it online right now. Ben, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Welcome to the program. Glad you're here. I'm actually going to talk a little bit about what's coming here instead of waiting an hour. I think it's important to know what's going on with Rex Tillerson and Russia and North Korea, because I believe we are possibly on the eve of global war. And let me tie these things together and explain what's happening in the world. Our Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, is going to Russia today to discuss Syria and the powder keg that it is. His wheels will touch down in Moscow as new allegations hit the news yesterday. And this is a really big deal. For some reason, the United States decided to announce that we believe that Russia and Putin was fully aware that Assad maintained a stockpile of chemical weapons, weapons that Putin and Russia had promised the world no longer existed. A U.S. official also said yesterday that a Russian drone was flying over the site of last week's chemical attack, and shortly afterwards, Russian or Syria jets bombed the survivors, presumably to get rid of all of the witnesses. So what exactly did we come out? This is really important stuff. We just said that Putin knew about the chemical weapons,
that Putin knew in advance that Assad was going to use them on his own people, then that they launched a drone to cover up any survivors, to cover up the evidence of the war crime. So Russia knew about a war crime and then committed another war crime to cover up for a war crime. That's a pretty big deal. That, if there's no red line in the sand on that one, remember, this is Hague stuff. We are now calling officially, our State Department and the White House came out and said, we have evidence that these things are true. That means that the United States is saying that Vladimir Putin and Russia are engaged in war crimes. Complicit doesn't begin to cover it. That is significant. And only one reason why I say we are headed towards a very dark place. Now, I don't think any of this should be surprising. I mean, Vladimir Putin, the all-knowing former head of the KGB, we think he was completely unaware that Assad cheated. Of course he knew. Now, 1,100 miles from where Tillerson's plane is going to be putting down, more Putin complicity is occurring. This time it's happening within Russia's own borders. No one can convince me that Vladimir Putin isn't involved. Nothing in Russia happens without Vladimir Putin's blessings. Nothing. Anyone will tell you that from Russia. This is happening with a guy who is a dear friend to Vladimir Putin. A report came out on April 1st that homosexuals were mysteriously disappearing in Chechnya. Over the previous week, up to 50 gay men had just vanished, and the rumor that over 100 were being detained. Now, listen to this. This is the Chechenian leader, President Ramzan Kadyrov. This is how he denied this, that they are now picking up any homosexual and murdering them or torturing them. Listen to this denial. You cannot arrest or repress people who don't exist. If such a people existed in Chechnya, gay people, law enforcement wouldn't have to worry about them. Their own relatives would have sent them where they could never return. End quote.
Wow.
Now, this is a Muslim ruler of Chechnya who is in bed with Vladimir Putin. He's a strong man. He's basically saying all the honor killings would have killed the homosexuals already. We don't have to do it. We don't have to do it. But the honor killings keep that population under control. This is a guy that Putin personally put into power. Yesterday, another Russian report came out in a very credible Russian publication that homosexuals are now being kept in a concentration camp. Quote, tortured with electric currents and heavily beaten, sometimes to death, end quote. There are things happening around the world that we have not seen since the 1940s. Are we to believe, first of all, that Putin knows nothing about any of this? Anybody who is now telling you that Russia is on the good side and the right side and hey, we haven't done some things, you know, we're not all saints over here. Don't listen to them. You will find yourself on the wrong side of history. This is inside of Russia. This is not some distant land. He knows John Podesta's email and his Gmail password, but he's missing the concentration camp that's happening inside his own country? I don't think so. We've all been told that the world is changing, and I have been telling you this for a while. You will not recognize the world. We are here, gang. 1,700 miles away, war drums are growing louder in North Korea. President Trump ordered the Carl Vinson Naval Strike Group to set sail, and park right on Kim Jong-un's backyard. China has now responded. Are you hearing any of this from your mainstream news? China has responded yesterday by sending 150,000 troops to the North Korean border. Now, presumably, this is to deal with a mass wave of refugees that they are expecting after a U.S. attack. North Korea issued a statement warning the United States of catastrophic consequences that would follow any American military action. Make no mistake here. This is not Iraq. This is not Syria. If war restarts with North Korea, this is warfare on a completely different scale. Violence is possible here. The kind of violence that we haven't seen since World War II. Analysts predict that the capital of South Korea, will be completely leveled after North Korea's counterattack. That means 2 million, is it 2 or 5 million people in Seoul? Completely annihilated.
10 million
people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they have the weaponry, and they have already said they will do it. Don't forget what kind of man Kim Jong-un is. This is a guy who's just assassinated his own family members. He maintains his own concentration camps, death camps for his own people. If somebody wrongs him, he imprisons, he tortures not just them and their family. But if you wrong him, three generations of your family live in a concentration camp and are tortured. That includes the elderly and the children. If North Korea ever falls, we're likely to see atrocities that we haven't seen since the Allied troops freed the Jews in World War II. I want you to listen to the next words. Do you remember when George Bush used to say, "Freedom's on the march"? Freedom's on the march. No, it is not. Freedom is in retreat. Darkness, tyranny, and oppression are on the march. The return all over the world of men like Stalin, Mao, Mussolini are just as active as they were a century ago. Remember, the world was weak in the 1980s and 90s. Who were the leaders of the repressed world? It was Andropov. The big repressive leaders had left the scene. And we got Gorbachev, a guy who was more in our camp than their camp. And the real leaders of the world were Thatcher and Reagan and Pope John Paul. The leaders that are happening now, the tyranny that is rising from the darkness all over the world, Putin in Russia, Erdogan in Turkey, Le Pen in France, Golden Dawn in Greece, Jobbik in Hungary, the AfD in Germany. The things that we stamped out in 1945 are roaring back to life. When we were kids, when I was a kid, there were black hats and white hats. It was really easy to know the difference between the good guy and the bad guy. It was easy for us to justify what we were doing in the world, but it couldn't be further from the truth now. It was easier when we were kids because we clearly defined who we were. We clearly defined what we believed. We clearly defined our principles. I don't know what our principles are now. I don't know who we are now. We can no longer run around the world and be the policeman. We shouldn't have in the first place, but we are no longer in that position. We are England. We are England in the 1930s, but there is no America to run to our rescue. We better be careful. Military action must be the last alternative. We don't start a war. We must start by redefining our principles. What is it we stand for? Let's get beyond ourselves. I again ask GLAAD and any organization like GLAAD, I will stand with you at my own expense. It will not be popular with fans of mine if I am standing with you. And I know it will not be popular for you to stand with me. But if we can't stand against homosexuals being put in concentration camps, if we can't stand together against homosexuals being thrown off the roof, we will never make it to the bakery. It requires us all to forget about politics and to lose ourself. Stop trying to save yourself, your job, your plans for the future, your bank account, whatever. Stop trying to protect whatever it is you value. We're not willing to call evil by its name. We're not willing to stand up for what we know is true because we don't want to lose our popularity. We don't want to lose likes on Facebook. The righteous in the 1930s and 40s did not suddenly become righteous. They just refused to go over the cliff with everyone else. When you turn a blind eye and you say, I won't stand with someone else because, well, I disagree with them on these things, but on I'm not willing to stand with them on throwing people off the roof or putting them in a concentration camp. You're repeating the mistakes of the 1940s. Because this is what happened in America in 1940. The same way. You know how we found out about this concentration camp in Russia with gay people? We found out because somebody escaped and got the word out to the press. But just in like the 1940s, when there was an escape from Auschwitz and they got that message to the press, no one listened because they didn't want to have to stand where they didn't want to stand. Decades of policing the world have colluded our founding clouded our founding principles. They are so clouded we can't see them anymore. We forget what we even stand for. But if we are to face the tyranny that is coming, the darkness that is gathering, we have got to find those principles again.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
Up on glennbeck.com right now, you have a you take a little survey and get a chance to win a canvas print of the artwork of one Glenn Beck.
How sweet is that?
Do we not have a better prize than that?
No.
No.
Now,
okay.
Is this the one where you? Is the nude,
I don't know which one it is.
The picture of Jeffy, right? It's the
yeah, the nude of Jeffy.
The nude of Jeffy
eating grapes.
He's going to be kind of he's bending over a couch.
All you have to do is just take our survey quickly. I think today is the last day to do this. Take our survey quickly at glennbeck.com. Look for the survey. Take it. Take 2 minutes.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
China appears to scorn Donald Trump with the call for the U.S. to preserve Syria's territorial sovereignty. They're also moving 150,000 troops to the North Korean border, apparently because they believe we're on the prowl and going to attack, and it sure looks like that. This is some really not good things are happening. Trump is taking control of the GOP machine. He's already getting ready for 2020 and changing out the people. If you are against Donald Trump, you are finding yourself no longer in control of the local party or the state party with the GOP. He's replacing all of that. And today, a big important election in Kansas. Republicans are nervous about this. This should be an easy win for them. if it's not, if even if the GOP wins, but it's closely contended, if experts are saying it spells real trouble for the GOP in midterms. That's happening in Kansas today. More on that. And a guy who seems to be on the same journey that de Tocqueville was on in the 1800s. When de Tocqueville was in France, wanted to figure out what the secret of America is, wanted to really learn what America was all about, couldn't find it in the institutions, couldn't find it in the big city, so he went from town to town, and he's the guy who said America is great because America is good. There is an author, a very well-respected European author, who just did the same thing. He didn't come out with the same point of view. We talk to him right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Wow. This is quite fascinating. I want to introduce you to Tuvia Tenenbaum, who is the author of Catch the Jew and the book that I want to talk to him about, the new one, The Lies They Tell, which is a very big bestseller in Europe right now. He is a native-born Israeli journalist, a playwright. He loves America. Now, I want to just read this part from the prologue. I love America, but I won't let this prejudice of mine cloud my judgment. In order to draw the fairest portrait of America, I make no specific plans as to which places to visit and where to what people to meet. I will let the winds blow wherever they may. The America I find is not the America I wish to find. It is racist, it is hateful, and its citizens are bound to destroy themselves. They blacks and some Spanish who have nothing better to do with their time than shoot each other in the head. Be they Jews who are possessed by a terrifyingly psychotic illness of self-hatred. Be they Indians who have given up any semblance of spirituality in exchange for acres and casinos, or be they all the others, the whites, the rest of the Spanish, Muslims, Mormons, and others who live in fear of one another. Holy cow.
Wow.
Welcome to the program, Tuvia.
Good morning to you. Good morning to your listener. Welcome to you as well.
Tuvia...
Yeah.
This is not a happy picture that you found.
I wish I could have found a better picture, but I still believe I come from the school. You know, in New York, you say, you see something, you say something. I say, you see something, you write something.
Okay, so...
Whatever you see, you write.
But
whatever you witness, you write.
You said...
The picture of America was surprising to me. This is... My prejudice was favorable. I thought I would be writing a glory book about America, and I wanted to, but the reality stood in my.
So why? Why is what? Why do you think? Because you basically paint us as a group of people who are wrapped in hatred and are on a self-destructive path. What is?
I want to add one thing. First of all, despite my accent, I am an American citizen. I live in America for many years as well. I live in Europe and in America, partly here, partly there. I made my studies, my university studies, for 15 years in the United States. I have founded a theater in the United States, in New York, the Jewish Theater of New York. And so I'm familiar at least a little bit with this country. But I live in America. I live in Manhattan in a bubble, you know, in an American bubble, and you see the world from that perspective. But what happens if you start walking? If you start driving America, most of its states, and you drive not on the highway, you drive on the sideways, which means you get to stop, you get to meet people from all walks of life. and you get to see what's really going on in the country. You get to see, for example, which I never believed would exist, you get to see the life of blacks in the inner cities. You get to see hoods, black ghettos, that I can tell you, I could not believe I was in the United States of America, as it was last year in 2016. I could not believe my eyes. I could not believe it. I have been to refugee camps in the Middle East. I am not new to war zones and places like this. I'm a journalist. I do these things. I travel all around the world. And I can tell you that the refugee camps in the Middle East are paradise.
That's not true. That's outrageous. That, I mean, I have to stop you. I've been to refugee camps. That's outrageous.
I know. Have you been to places like, give you an example. Have you been to a place that voted, that the ones who first put Barack Obama into politics, into a seat in the office, into state, the Senate, you know, in Illinois, the people who voted for him. I went to visit them. I went to talk to them. To see what they feel, are they getting, it was at the hand of Obama's presidency, what they feel about Obama. Have you been there? Have you seen it? I was there. Everybody tried to stop me. I parked my car in a garage. I took a bus. It was the last bus. South Side Chicago. The driver sees me getting off. He's a black man. He says to me, where are you going, man? I said, it's last stop. I'm getting off. He said, no, you ain't getting off here. Ain't a good place. You stay on the bus till I go back. I had to argue with him to get off at the last stop. I get off at the last stop. I get off, start walking in the neighborhood, in the hood, waiting seconds. A van stops near me. Off-white van. Two men are inside. With protected bulletproof vests, machine guns, open the windows down, and they say, excuse me, where are you going? What are you doing here, sir? And they tried all the best they could to make sure I don't go inside the neighborhood. America! In and our day
who,
and time.
Who were they? Who were these people?
Wait. Who were these people?
The police.
With machine guns?
Police, yeah. Well, unmarked car, oh, yeah. Machine guns, yeah. You can't believe what happens. I have videos of everything. Everything we recorded, I went with my wife and also a team of people. We have it on a video. We have pictures of it. Because always I say to myself, you must document everything you see. Because you never know when you come back. And you start writing it if people will believe you. So I document everything.
So
I have a video person, I have a sound person. We go to places, nothing candid camera, let me tell you.
So are you telling me that in Germany or in France or in Brussels or in the Netherlands? I mean, I was just in Sweden. I was in that exact same situation.
Yeah. I want to give an example. Marxloh in Germany, in Duisburg. That's a hood, Turkish. If you're not Turkish, don't even the police doesn't go there. But you know a nice place it is? I have been there for 10 days, I stayed there. For 10 days. No problem. I enjoyed it. I walked on the street. I felt safe all over.
Yeah. Well, I was just in Sweden. I was just in Sweden, and I was in one of the worst places in Sweden. And I was there literally for 10 minutes. Pat, you weren't with me. I was there literally for 10 minutes, and security was all over us. We almost had happened to us exactly the same thing that the 60 Minutes crew happened to them.
I'll give you one difference that I do. I never collaborate with the authorities. Meaning, when I go to these places, I don't tell anybody.
No, neither do we.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example. Al Wahdat, a refugee camp in Jordan. Hell on earth. I have been there. I stayed there. When I left, I was crying. I cried. I did too. Cried for the horrible fate of those people inside. You know?
Did you have a good experience anywhere in America?
if I had good experience anywhere in America, of course there are good experiences in America. I mean, America is a great country. It's a beautiful place. I mean, some of the places you are like shocked. The natural resources here are amazing. I mean, have you ever been in Utah, in Moab? Have you ever been in
yes.
Yeah, but I don't mean, the natural beauty. Did you find anybody? I mean, this is exactly the opposite.
I found many people who are amazing. They are in the book. I found many people who are amazing, that I really bonded with them, that I fell in love with them. You know, when I say this about America, it doesn't mean everything in America. God forbid, nowhere. Nothing exists 100%. So people.
So then, what is?
I will never ever forget.
So we have de Tocqueville. We have de Tocqueville coming in the 1800s, who said America is great because America is good. If you had to sum up what is happening with America, why would you say this is happening?
I think because we are living in an age of political correctness that went awry. Amok. I mean, people cannot say anymore what they think. People cannot feel anymore what they think. People have to hide their thoughts. Ask the average American stranger on the street in any of the states in America what they voted for last election. You'll not get an answer. No politics, no religion. Have you ever experienced that in any other Western European country, Go to Germany and ask the people, how did you vote for last election? They'll openly tell you, argue with you. No fear. In America, people are afraid. People are afraid to talk. Everybody almost says, no politics, no religion. Nothing controversial. Everything is controversial. They are so afraid to tell you what you think. We live, the political correctness in America is gone stupidly wrong. I mean, it's like there is nothing you can say anymore. If you are a man and you look at a woman just on the street, you might be arrested, detained. I mean, it's like we are crazy. We are gone crazy. In places of work, if you are a man and your co-worker came with a nice dress and you say, oh, you look good, that's sexual harassment. Everything we do. I mean, it's like, why do you think people voted for Trump? I mean, if you read a book, this is a perfect prescription for Trumpland. How did I know that this is a Trumpland? Because these are the people. They liked it, the Trump. They don't know who Trump is. Nobody knows who Trump is. I don't know if he knows who he is. But the point is, he broke all those political correctness things. He was a guy who talks ugly, who changed his mind every day, lied. His behavior with women is questionable, but people voted for him. Why? Because people looked at this man and said, look at this guy. He says what he thinks. I wish I could be like that. I feel pity for Americans. The gatekeepers of culture, of our country, of the United States of America, is forbidding us to say what we think. Yeah. Most of the media, if you read the media, there is nothing you can think anymore. You must follow a path of what they give you.
Talking to
you as a citizen, feel horrible. So is this horrible? Yes, it is horrible.
Tuvia Tenenbaum, author of The Lies They Tell. Tuvia, you did this. You made this trip across America in the middle of this election. How much of the sort of negativity and do you ascribe to just a really tense time in American history?
I don't think that was it, because usually what I try to do, I mean, if you do surveys that are like, you know, the normal surveys that you have, like Pew Social Research or places like this, and you do 5 minutes talk, then it's effective. But if you sit with people and talk with them 10 minutes, 15 minutes, sometimes an hour, I don't think, and they start trusting you and they tell you what you think, I think this is unrelated to the political environment, I mean, for the election year. I think that's what's my feeling. My feeling that, you know, people were just telling me what they felt. I mean, I was taken by them. I didn't force anybody to say what they think, of course. But, you know, and what I found out, which is very, very amazing, is that people, because they're so afraid to talk, you know, in the beginning they tell you everything is nice. They love everybody. Every black loves a Jew. Every Jew loves a black. Every white loves black. Every black loves white. Everybody likes diversity. Everybody is happy. And everybody likes gay. And everybody, you know, wants to be gay. I don't know.
Everyone does want to be gay. That is true. Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
Like, oh, yeah, you know. And but then when you sit down and talk to them, often enough, it's under 180 degrees difference. All of a sudden, they tell you the truth. What you really feel. Yeah.
Tuvia Tenenbaum is the author. The book is The Lies They Tell, a frank look at America, at least the America that Tuvia found. We appreciate it, Tuvia. Thank you so much for being on the...
And I just want to say, you want to add one thing. Whatever negative I've written in the book was not in a point of, okay, yeah, screw you. It was more in a point of, let's see the mirror. I put it in love, not in hatred.
No, Tuvia, I appreciate it. And I think some of the conclusions, I'm sorry that that's the America that you found, because I don't think that's who we are, but I do think that you're right about political correctness and what is driving us off this cliff, multiculturalism and political correctness. So thank you so much, Tuvia.
And what I saw in the Jewish world was frightening to me. I mean, yeah.
God bless.
Thank you very much for having me.
You bet. Happy Passover.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
The fusion of entertainment. And enlightenment.
We are one. The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Boy, that was a tough interview. I mean, interview. I think there's a lot to digest there. I think he's finding the things he was looking for, not necessarily wanting to find, but things he was looking for. He was mad at the bus driver for being kind and saying, don't go here. Yeah. Mad at the police for stopping him saying, don't go here. That's like being mad at Alaskans if I go up and I'm going into bear country. And, you know, I'm from New York, and they're like, dude, don't go here. Shut up. You Alaskans are so... You're going into where there are bears.
This is America. I can do anything I want.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, you can go there, but there are dangerous parts of America.
Yes, yes, very dangerous parts.
Come on, of course there's going to be.
Yeah, but with all the negative stuff he said, I do believe he's right when he says, you know, you just talk surface and every black loves every white and every white loves every black and everybody wants to now be homosexual.
And I think that's true.
I think that's absolutely true.
Yeah, we all love diversity now.
Yeah, and even though we don't, we have other things that we're feeling, and I don't think that beneath those feelings is hatred. I think beneath those feelings is an anger of, why are you pushing me into a cookie cutter?
Yeah.
I am, it's the same thing with Brexit.
Right.
It's not a hatred of Europe. It is, I don't want to be in the cookie cutter. And that's what I think the whole world is missing, at least anybody in power. We don't want to be in a cookie cutter.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
Is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. Obama's debt interest bomb. We'll talk to you about that here in just a second. You know, we just had this author on a minute ago who is, Der Spiegel's bestseller, The Lies They Tell, and it's about America. And it paints a pretty horrible picture of us, and one I don't agree with. But I do agree with his assessment that we're a bunch of people that are suicidal. I mean, listen to this part of it. America that I find is not the America I wish for. It's racist, it's hateful, and its citizens are bound to destroy themselves. I don't think it's racist. I don't think it's hateful. I think it is confused and angry right now. And it is bound to destroy. I mean, it seems like we're on a self-destruct path because nobody is willing to use reason. We're only using emotion, sound bites, and we are so angry at the system. We're so angry at the things that have been pushing us around that we're willing to look. Like he said, you know, America wants to know why Trump won because this guy is just saying what he thinks.
Yeah.
And everybody is like, I want to be like that. I can't be like that. I can't say, I can't get away with that. Not that you want to say the things he said. You just want to hold up somebody who's like, hey, he's just saying it all. He doesn't care. So I don't even know if I agree with him. I don't care if I agree with him. He doesn't care. And he's right. I think he's right on that.
Because, yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I agree that. I mean, he sounded like he couldn't find one decent group of human beings the whole country. No. I mean, come on now. No. Come on.
It's interesting.
And even when he brought up Utah, he was talking about the
mountains.
Scenic beauty of it.
Well, have you ever been there, Pat?
I have, a few times. Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised that he couldn't find anybody he liked. At least the what he talked about. And that's just not the America that I know.
It's interesting, interesting because it seems like a lot of people have the opposite experience. I mean, Riaz Patel is one we've talked to lately who is a liberal, went into the middle of...
Right. That's a guy, great example.
How about the guy we just had from London
in
the studio 2 days ago?
Yes.
He came in here and he found America to be really a giving, generous nation.
Helpful.
I just think his... I think what he finally gets to in the end of multiculturalism... And this anger.
And we all know that part is true.
That's true. That's true. So you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I mean, that part is true.
But he seems like an angry guy.
I don't know. I don't know anything about him. I don't know anything about him. But
so.
Is it possible he just interacted with Jeffy several times and that was really kind of tainted?
Well, it is possible. Quite honestly, it is possible that you know, he dismissed this. But I think the America you found during the election, I didn't even recognize that America.
It was very tense and a little...
That is very possible.
Angry
went into a little bit of that.
I went to places that I've never seen that were as angry as they were. And we were a divided... I mean, we're not, I don't think, as divided as we were. During that election, we were really, really angry and really divided. And... Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going out and talking to America and expecting to find the America that we all know and love at that time, I didn't see it. And part of that was people wanted an end and they wouldn't listen to reason.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're starting to return a little to reason, I think.
People were being told 2 + 2 = 5. So. We kept trying to say, no,
it's 4.
They wouldn't listen.
For instance, you're seeing this now. You're seeing this big fall away from the 2 + 2 = 5 people. Because, you know, there are people who said, hey, we gotta vote for whatever the reason. And people said, no, fix reason firmly in her seat. That doesn't add up. He's not going to do that. And the first ones to really get burned, and I warn you, I warn you the same way I warned about Barack Obama, and thank God this didn't happen. But I said, if Barack Obama gets in and he is not the guy the radicals think he is in grave danger from the radical left.
I think he was enough of what they thought he was, though, to placate them. Now, this might be a different story because the people who thought Trump was a peacenik are
and
gravely... disappointed and really pissed off right
and pro-Russia.
Yeah.
I mean, the Russia thing, I mean, he is picking a fight with Russia. I think personally that's what Putin has wanted the whole time. I mean, if you remember right, I know Stu did, that we'll be in war with Russia by the end of his first term.
And one of his biggest supporters, the guy who was in the tank for him the whole time, is now all pissed off at him. Michael Savage. We're just ranting
and
raving.
Did he write a book about him?
Yes, as a matter of fact, he did. What was it called? Was it Trump's World or
something? It was like Ann Coulter, who is also wrote a book about.
She's also
disenchanted
right now.
Yeah,
But this was what Savage said yesterday.
So let me go back to my main contention here. This was not even a sarin gas attack. That's aside from the fact that Assad, who has been accused of gassing his own people, had nothing to gain by gassing his own people. Let's assume that are in the camp that bought hook, line, and sinker, the big lie, that Assad would gas his own people with sarin gas. Now, what would Assad have gained by doing that? Is he stupid? Is he that stupid not to have figured out what would happen a day later? So why would he do it? He was winning.
Was he losing?
Was he desperate? Was Assad desperate enough to use sarin on children? Of course not.
So who's got sarin gas? ISIS?
No, he says it wasn't sarin. It's some other kind of gas.
He's saying it's not sarin gas.
Yeah. Well, who used the gas? ISIS?
No, he's...
The United States
Who actually...
I mean, who actually gassed the people?
Just no,
he's saying it's a different chemical mix.
It's a false flag.
Just know it's a false flag.
Yeah,
it's a different chemical mix.
Don't look into it any deeper than that, Glenn. It's a false flag.
If you say false flag, you don't have to...
Right, you don't have to have any other explanation.
I believe
that... Glenn, it's a false flag.
Is it a flag?
Okay, all right.
If it's a flag, it's a false flag.
It's a false flag.
There's no such thing as a regular flag. It's only false flags.
But there's no logic in America. There are just robots, RNCers, neocons pretending to be conservatives.
Are you serious?
Let me give you some evidence and you decide for yourself.
Okay.
Because this military tweet by President Trump is an embarrassment.
Oh, my.
It was not a strategic move.
Mm-hmm.
Has he thought about what follows? McCain is glowing over this. What does that tell you? The Soros globalist cabal has now won.
Yes.
Trump is doing their bidding.
Yes.
Wow. Isn't this what we told Hillary we didn't want her to do? Isn't this why we voted for Trump? Isn't this why I sacrificed the year of my life?
Wrongly.
To work to get Trump elected.
I'm not sure why you sacrificed a year of your life to get Trump elected. That was a really bizarre move.
It really was.
For everybody who did that, that was a bizarre move.
I just really don't like his disloyalty here. It really disturbs me that he's not being loyal.
He's not selling out.
He won't stick with the president.
He's a sellout. You know
why isn't he backing the president?
He's a conservative.
I bet he got $104,000 from somebody.
Oh, that's probably right.
From probably Hillary and George
After
Soros.
After his book, Trump's War,
that's what it was.
Battle for America.
Yeah.
Trump's War. And one of the things is he didn't want Trump to get us into war. And one of the things that we talked about was, are you kidding me? This guy is likely to get us into war.
Yes.
I mean, the idea that he's this restrained guy that's going to be a non-interventionist when he's in office.
You ever been on Twitter? You know that perception is incorrect. If you've never been on Twitter.
Here, may I say? 2 + 2 = 4.
Five.
Oh.
Oh.
What?
No. If you saw him on
2 = 5. 4.
You saw him on Twitter, it's 2 + 2 = 4. Oh, boy.
Mm. Oh, man.
By the way, it's
you
not...
saw him on Twitter, right?
I did. Right.
And he always says 2 + 2 = 5.
Okay.
Not the only one, by the way. He seems to have lost over the Syria thing. Is Michael Savage. Now, Donald Trump Jr. said that Mike Cernovich, the conspiracy theorist, should win a Pulitzer Prize for his reporting on Susan Rice just a couple days before he went on and said Trump was being conned into believing the people want war. And he did a live stream protesting it. Then alt-right philosopher Stefan Molyneux joined Cernovich to condemn the action and question whether Assad
name
was...
like you have never heard it before.
It's almost like that. Yeah. Have really responsible for the chemical weapons attack.
Who is?
He said they questioned whether Assad was really responsible for the attack.
Is anybody saying who was responsible for
it? That's what I'd like to know.
It's a false flag, guys. It's a false flag.
Right. I almost forgot. That was my argument just a few minutes ago.
And now you've forgotten.
Here's the problem.
Milo Yiannopoulos, who was very upset, called the airstrike fake and gay.
Oh, boy. Is Milo Yiannopoulos a cuckservative?
Apparently.
I think so.
White nationalist Richard Spencer. Oh, no. He's been lost. He says said it was a sad, shocking, and deeply frustrating moment. I condemn the strikes.
Oh, these cuckservatives.
Look at all of them. All of them, too, are Russia supporters.
He's becoming a globalist and neocon shill.
Globalist. Pretty soon the frogs will be turning gay.
Another.
You know what they're feeding them in the water? Soy. Soy milk in the water. It's turning the frogs gay.
It's gay soy,
we're
too.
We're dumping soy milk
in the water. Soy milk into the water. It's turning the frogs gay. Because soy milk makes you gay, Beck. Don't pretend like you don't know that. Where are the men? Where are the men?
I'm sorry. I know this is a family show.
Excuse me.
It's just sad because, you know, and Coulter, you pointed out as well, is turning on Trump over this. It's very sad to see their disloyalty. Why won't they just line up behind this president?
I don't understand it. Why do they simply hate Trump?
He's the president. Get on board. Get on board. On board now. Why won't they listen?
I don't know.
Bastards.
It's incredible because that's what all of them were saying. to us about healthcare just 3 weeks ago. And now they Trump does something they don't like, and now they're bitching about him.
Sad. I just don't like it. Sad exclamation
point. It's disloyal. I'll tell you that
right
now.
I'll tell you that much.
And this whole thing was a false flag. I'm back on board with that.
The problem is, I go back to where we were, you know, a year ago. It's not going to work out well. They're not going to be happy. We're not going to be happy. Syrians aren't going to be happy. Russians aren't going to be happy. There's a chance, guys, that we are going to global war.
Well,
not war. This is really important for people to understand. Not the kind of war you are used to. The kind of war that we used to have in World War II. That kind of war. Not the kind of war, not this pissant, oh, are we still at war kind of war. I mean a global war.
When you look and you see the tenuous circumstances we're in Syria, where we've struck them and Russia has said if we do it again, they're going to strike back at us. And we've got the
Before you get there.
In Korea.
Don't forget what we also have in Syria. And that is yesterday, in an astounding move. No, I haven't heard anybody really lean on this. In an astounding move, we have also said, oh, by the way, Russia knew about that war crime in advance and then sent a drone out to destroy the evidence. And so it is Russia who participated in a war crime and a cover-up of a war crime.
That's an incredibly serious charge.
Oh, my gosh. That is like, do you remember what it felt like when they shot down KAL-007 and we thought we were going to war with Russia? You remember that? In the 1980s.
Yeah. And that was the last time it felt like we were going to war.
Yeah, this guys, America does not understand what we just said yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
We just said, you're an accomplice in war crimes. Meanwhile, their people are saying, you know, what Spencer is saying, America is setting you up.
And then don't forget, on the other side of the globe, we got the North Korean situation, where we've got a Navy battle group poised off the coast of North Korea.
And again,
to potentially strike.
And again, something that people aren't talking about in the news, 150,000 Chinese, the troops
on the North Korean border.
On the North Korean border, just been moved there. Not good.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Well, a couple of things we haven't gotten to. The Republicans are nervous about the Kansas election that is happening today.
Yeah, what's the deal on that?
Okay, so the deal is there... now I just hear the theme music, so it's going to be really tough to get to. If this is even close, this should be a blowout for the Republicans.
Oh, okay, yeah, right.
If it is close, or if the Republicans lose this seat, it's a very big deal and could spell disaster for 2018.
Then tomorrow we should talk about the Alabama governor who's resigning in that sex scandal.
It is
He's
so
74.
Gross. I know, I don't want to even think about it.
74. He was married for 50 years, and now he lost his wife. Sad. Sad.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.